From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
The de facto start of the professional disc golf season is this weekend with the Wintertime Open out in Pasadena, California. We're going to be talking about that and more on today's episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how is your week going so far?
To be honest, not that great. We had some really heavy rain at the end of last week, and long story short, I don't have my office or access to our den or guest room down. So basically half of our house is just not usable for the time being. So I'm recording in a different room in our house. So hopefully it doesn't sound crazy or anything.
But sounds great. Yeah. Sounds like a new opportunity is what it sounds like, Sarah.
Sure. We'll look on the bright side of life. Yeah.
No, that's hard.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm ready. I'm excited for the season to start. We've got the first, and this is not to knock on any of the other big events that we've had already this year, but really, Wintertime Open is one of the first big ones. We're going to get Central Coast Disc Golf video coverage, and a lot of top players coming out. We'll get to that after the break. But first, what we're going to do is we're going to take some time. I had a little chat with someone you might have heard of. His name's Eagle McMahon. And, thought it would be a good thing, get with him before the national tour season starts and just take his temperature, see how things are going after a busy year and a busy off season. So we're going to take a break real quick, hear from Eagle McMahon. And then when we come back, Sarah and I are going to chop it up a little more about the Wintertime Open. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. Joining us now on PDGA Radio is 2018 PDGA National Tour Champion and winner of quite a few events last year, Eagle McMahon. Eagle, how has your offseason been, man? We haven't caught up in a little while.
How's it going, Steve? Good to be back on here. I believe this is my first official interview of 2019.
So hey, all right. We will take it. We will take it. You have a kind of a... This isn't my first question, but it will be now. You kind of have like a direct line to fans through social media and your vlog and everything. Like, do you like still doing interviews, even though you can just communicate with people in your chosen medium if you wanted to?
I think there's a time and place for both. Definitely doing it yourself can be a little bit easier. And you might have a little bit more free reign to kind of do what you want. But I definitely do think it's important to reach out to other different media platforms and kind of help them out. And just really, I think that's a really good way to grow the sport. So,
well, it depends, we appreciate that.
It's good to have a good variety, in my opinion.
I think it definitely helps PDGA Radio to have Eagle McMahon come on. So, yes, thank you. We appreciate that. How's your off season? I don't know. How's it been? Let's say there are people who haven't been following your social media religiously. I know you've been working out a lot. You've been trying to gain weight and bulk up a little bit, but kind of break it down for me. How's the off season been for you?
Great question. Well, the off season more or less started in early November, even though I played the Veterans Park Open, which was somewhere in mid-November. I still count that as being a part of the off season, just because it was sure. More of a cool down event. I didn't really pay attention to results too much, but starting in late November, I began training, which put me at about up until now, put me about 2.5 months of training pretty much every single day. Over the course of that 2.5 month span, I logged, I believe, over 90 workouts.
Wow.
So the workouts included strength training, cardio, yoga, foam rolling, stretching, just 90 sessions where I moved my body. And I really feel good after that. Over that course of time, I was trying to put down a whole bunch of calories, especially at the start. I was trying to eat about 3,500 to 4,000 calories a day. I was trying to bulk up. And to break down the results for you. Over the course of 2.5 months, I gained around 16 pounds.
Wow.
And I think it's, hopefully it's muscle. I feel like I'm in pretty decent shape right now. So definitely a lot of focused hard work there. A lot of people know that I went to Switzerland in 2018, and that was absolutely amazing, a complete paradigm shift for me. I realized like how much like what a being a professional athlete takes, like behind the scenes. Like, it's not all puppies and rainbows being a professional athlete. You got to put your head down and put in work when no one's looking. But that was all like super assisted by one of my coaches, Andy Gerich. But this year I kind of took it more upon myself to find the discipline on my own and tell myself, you need to get out of bed today and do a workout, even if you don't want to. So I think that was very valuable, just kind of really pushing myself on my own terms.
Now, I mean, trying to put like 3,500, 4,000 calories in your body per day, was there a time where you were getting tired of eating food?
Yes, I definitely tapered down towards the end. I was probably only putting anywhere from like 25 to 3,500 a day. But I mean, a basic rule of thumb for myself is that I just eat a huge plate each meal to where I don't feel hungry whatsoever after. And that was pretty much more of a healthy way to do it for me. I talked a little bit to one of my coaches, or he's a coach, but I mean, I'm paying the personal trainer. He's a lot less intimate than what G-Balance is doing in Switzerland. But he's just saying, if you can't find a diet or a regimen that you can do the rest of your life, you shouldn't even really do it. So I'm trying to focus on more like a sustainable diet right now, which does have me put down a whole bunch of calories, but it's a little bit easier to meet those requirements each day.
Now, adding weight and adding muscle, have you had to alter your throwing form at all? Has it changed anything? Has it thrown off your timing at all? Or has it all been pretty seamless and smooth? I know a lot of what you're doing is, like you said, yoga and foam rolling and stuff. So it doesn't sound necessarily like you're going to be, having difficulties in like fluid motion. But did you notice if there was any difference in that regard?
A lot of the movements that I've been doing, I'm not like going and bench pressing and just doing curls and trying to bulk up like that. I'm more focused on functional movement. So a lot of the things I was doing were focused on strengthening my hips, my shoulders, and just my joints in general. Just so if I were to maybe throw a shot, maybe slip a little bit, I'm going to be a lot less injury resistant than I maybe would be before I did that. So it's really just focusing on not getting hurt, and gaining a little bit of muscle was probably just a side effect from that. So to answer your question, I don't really notice too big of a difference. The only difference that I do notice is that when I'm throwing distance out of the field, I feel like I'm throwing an extra maybe 20 to 30 feet.
Oh man, that sounds terrible. That's like a really bad side effect of all that working out, isn't it?
That might be because of the new Discmania DD3 Cloudbreaker as well. That thing.
Absolutely. Oh, that's right. I've heard of that thing. I've heard it's pretty good. So, with all of this working out and trying to, you know, get your body in shape for the season, do you feel? Does it translate to a different mentality in terms of, handling expectations and things like that? Do you come into the season feeling, like your mental game is different than last year? Obviously, going into last year, you were still kind of trying to get over that big hump of that first big win. Now you've gotten over that, but that doesn't change the expectations, right? If anything, they're almost higher for you. So how do you feel the mental game is right now?
I think the mental game is really strong. I for a few different reasons. I think the first one is working out and strengthening your body, to me, is a mental grind in and of itself. So that translates to on the course, and it brings you confidence. To say when I step up on, let's say, hole one of Wintertime Open Las Vegas Challenge, I know that I've put in a lot of hard work in the gym, on the practice green, stretching, foam rolling, and I can use that as confidence. And even if I don't throw the best shot, maybe if I don't have the greatest round, I know that I know that all the work that I have done is my confidence. So I'm really not too worried on that front. And then another thing is I've been reading a whole bunch of books on like mental strategies, how to be better and all that kind of stuff. So I have a pretty good foundation to, let's say, a good mindset to start off with. And last year was really about proving myself that I am capable. And I'm really happy with the results I got from last year. But this year, I'm really focusing on creating good habits throughout the year that I can use for many years to come. And those habits are really only focusing on what I can control, not really worry about what Paul McBeth shoots, what Ricky shoots, or anyone else is doing, just kind of staying within my own realm and giving it my best shot every single weekend. And if I can do that, then I think that's going to be the most sustainable kind of strategy for the next 5-10 years or however long my career may be.
Was there anything you were trying to add to the physical part of your game? Any shots or anything you were trying to refine? I mean, obviously you already have a really well-rounded game. I know your forehand was a big, an improvement over last year versus seasons past. At least you were leaning on a lot more and gained more distance out of it. Is there anything like that this year beyond just the mental stuff?
I don't think there's anything too significant. I will say in the off season, I have been practicing a little, really focusing on maybe a more straight added approach to the game. So taking my mid ranges, my fairway drivers, and just trying to poke them straight at the basket. So maybe get a little bit better in the woods, a little bit more direct style.
Do you feel like has that been a knock, like that you're not as good in the woods?
I feel like the knock is there, and I can definitely see why people would think that. But if you look at my kind of stats in the woods, I mean, they're still better than most people's. So
right.
I think just relative to, let's say, a course like Vegas or more of an open course, the contrast is there. I definitely have an advantage. I feel like I am better suited to play a more open style course, but I don't think my technical game is not there.
Speaking of Vegas, obviously it's coming up. I know you said you're going to play Wintertime Open before that, and then first national tour event, you come in as defending champion. I guess beyond anything on a smaller or more regional scale, this is the first really big event you're coming into as defending champion. We're going to have you on the the round one feature card. Does that change the mindset? Is there any pressure or any nerves at all, or are you able to compartmentalize all that and just look at it as a brand new tournament?
Well, I like to believe that I'm leaning more towards the latter option, which but of course there will be a little bit of pressure involved with that. I mean, I've never really gone into a tournament of that caliber as defending champion, but like I said earlier, I'm really trying to create good habits this year and just focus on what's in my control. And for that event, what's in my control is how I practice, how I prepare, and how I handle myself on the course. So if I can focus on those aspects of the disc golf that weekend, then that's really all I should worry about.
Now you were out in Vegas, or actually you are out in Vegas right now, correct? Have you gotten out to Wild Horse to practice yet?
I'm actually meeting up with my friend Eric Oakley today at 2 o'clock, and we're gonna go get our first practice round there. So I'm very excited.
All right. Well, we should have talked to you tomorrow. Darn it! I was curious about any course changes. I know they made a couple tweaks here and there, so I'm curious to see how everything's shaping up out there, but maybe that'll give me an excuse to catch up with you next week. what are your travel plans for this year? I know last year, you were in like the Discmania trailer hitting most of the big events. Is that kind of the plan this year? Are you doing an, I feel like we've talked about maybe you're doing an extended run in Europe. What's the big overall season plan for you?
It's a little bit more mixed this year. For those who don't know, I got braces last year, and with braces comes great responsibility. So that means that every like 4 to 6 weeks, I have to drop back home to get my face adjusted. So that kind of that changes my travel plans a little bit. So yeah. Starting off the year, I'm with my dad. I bought a new Subaru Crosstrek in the off season, so we're traveling that. And then kind of throughout the year, I'll be with I'll be either in my car with the Discmania RV or maybe just with some other friends. So it's a little bit more mixed this year compared to last year, where I was mostly in the chaos, as we call it, the Discmania rig.
Nice. Okay. So, how's the Subaru treat? I feel like is a Subaru like the standard issue vegan vehicle?
Well, I posted a picture of my Subaru with my new Thule rack on it, and Eric Oakley sent me a DM and said, "You are now level 99 Boulder, Colorado," which pretty accurate. Like if you go to either Colorado,
you can easily transplant to Oregon, I think, too.
Okay, for sure. Which is good news because those are my two favorite states in the U.S. So
yeah, I have a theory that when you move to Oregon, like when you go to the DMV to get your new license, they just give you a Subaru. I just that's my theory. I don't know if it's true, but there's a lot of them up there. So I mean, let's. I'm gonna get off the beaten path a little bit here, but just thinking about, you know, this doesn't have to be all let's talk about tournament stuff, but you know, we can talk about life too because you're a varied individual. So I have to ask you, on a scale from 1 to 10, what's your excitement level about the upcoming Detective Pokemon film?
Oh man,
have you seen the previews?
I have seen the previews. And this might hurt a few people's feelings. My excitement level is really not that high about it, honestly.
Not feeling it?
I mean, I definitely love Pokemon to a certain degree, but I think people think I like it a lot more than I actually do. Like back in the day, I just wore the Ash Ketchum hat playing tournaments as kind of like a joke, not because I like, oh my gosh, I love Pokemon, but
yeah, but you had the mini and everything too, right?
I used to, yeah. I'm not using the Pokemon mini anymore, okay. So I don't know. The excitement level for the movie maybe is like a 3 or a 4.
Oh, you're maturing. You're growing up so much before our eyes.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's okay. What else? What are you looking forward to on the road this year besides the tournaments? Do you have any big sightseeing plans? Or I know you like to go and you know, hit up some concerts or things like that when anything's in town. Have you hooked up anything for the year?
Honestly, I'm always looking forward to the West Coast swing just because a lot of those cities, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Portland, all those places are super fun to visit. Europe's always fun. But honestly, I don't have anything too crazy planned. I'm excited for the process of getting to each and every city, practicing for the tournament that will be there, and just really playing disc golf. I'm really looking forward to the process, and as funny as it sounds, I'm looking forward to working out. I'm actually working with Disc Golf Strong now, and what he's got going is really cool. He's helping a whole bunch of different pro disc golfers out there. He knows our schedules. He helps us program different workouts, whether like we should be working out or not, because of how packed like each week is. So he knows when we are traveling in the car, when we're practicing, playing tournaments. So he'll give us workouts accordingly to when we should be doing them. So I'm really looking forward to doing that, honestly, and just bettering my body.
When you started playing disc golf, did you ever envision a scenario where you were taking it this seriously?
I don't think so, but I definitely thought that it could present opportunities like this. Like, I don't want to say, like, that's a good question. I don't really remember what I used to think when I was 10 years old.
Sure.
I think what I mostly thought was, how can I get my dad to buy me a new disc? That's what I was
thinking. You probably don't have that problem anymore, huh?
Oh, I still have that problem.
Does your dad still play with you a lot?
When he can, yeah. It's mostly back home in Boulder, just playing our local 18 and 9-hole courses. But he does when he's feeling good. He has a lot of he has some ailments from his job and disc golf that kind of prevent him playing as much as he wants to.
Do you get pretty competitive out there, or is it pretty just lighthearted, having a good time?
It's mostly lighthearted, but like, let's say the course back home, Valmont Disc Golf Park, it's super short, 18-hole course. I mean, we get pretty competitive out there because we're both about the same skill level considering the length of the course, so it gets pretty heated at times.
Nice. All right, two more things, and then I'll let you go. Number one, what is Discmania teasing right now? Come on, you got to give me something to go on. This evolution of the game.
Gosh.
Can you give us a hint?
I want to spill the beans. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of a hint that won't give it away.
All right.
Oh, man.
I mean, is it literally like, okay, so you guys have this video of you and Simon opening what looks like just a disc-sized box, right? So, I mean, is it bigger than the box?
It is bigger than the box, but it's not bigger than the box.
All right, I think I'm even more confused.
Okay, it's... It has the possibility to change the perspective of disc golf in many ways.
Okay. All right. I like that. We're supposed to have UC on the show, I believe, next week to talk about it, because I think the big reveal will have been done by then. So I'm looking forward to it. And last one for you. Bold predictions for 2019. You got any?
Bold predictions. I haven't really been paying attention to too many like top players throughout the offseason, but I actually have been watching a few of his vlogs. Sepu Payo, I really like his demeanor out there. I think he's really focused when it comes to disc golf. He's been playing for a long time. I like how he's always in the gym trying to strengthen his body. I think Sepu Payo might be someone you want to keep your eyes on.
I like that. I always like to watch Sepo. He's just a fun player to watch.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Well, Eagle, thank you for your time. As always, good luck this week out at the Wintertime Open, and we'll see you soon in Vegas, defending champ. Going to be fun.
I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
All right, that was Eagle McMahon. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, Sarah. Wintertime Open this weekend, the 41st annual Wintertime Open, takes place at the world's first disc golf course, the famed Oak Grove Park in Pasadena. And, you know, this kind of signifies one of the kind of the start of the season. We've got a lot of the big players coming out. And that means it's going to be the first time we do some picks, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm right, ready.
Picks a little bit. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's take a look at this field a little bit at the Wintertime Open. Obviously, on the men's side, really the biggest look, the biggest story of this tournament, I don't care what anybody says, and I don't think anybody's going to say anything differently, is this is the first time we're going to see Paul McBeth throwing discraft.
Yeah. That's coming into my head when I'm doing my picks, for sure.
Yo, yeah, same here. Like, there's definite risk. At the same time, you know, he plays this event every year, knows the course like the back of his hand, I'm sure. But here's my question for you, Sarah. Let's just speculate. So Central Coast Disc Golf, they have they're doing the video footage for this one.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come out next day. Obviously, they're going to have like a feature card with Paul McBeth, and I'm not sure who else. We'll keep an eye on that, but. So Central Coast Disc Golf right now has just a shade under 64,000 YouTube subscribers.
Okay.
How many views do you think they are going to get on this first video of Paul McBeth playing for Discraft?
Oh. I have no baseline because I don't know, like, how many views do they get for...
I mean, it just depends. Like, you know, Beaver State Fling, they were getting like 82,000. That's a pretty good one that they were on lead MPO. Let's do this. Let's compare it to last year's Wintertime Open.
And are you talking
check that out.
Just within the span of the first 24 hours
I'm
after
talking about, yeah, first, yeah, like I feel like it's going to be a lot really fast.
I think I don't know why, and I'm sure this is the reason that I feel this way is because I do this podcast now. But I feel like there's been so much more momentum going into this season than in previous years, and maybe that's because
in terms of just excitement.
Yeah, like all the people that are maybe it's just the team, the sponsorship switches. There's such big news there. I mean, a big part of it is that I'm part of this podcast, and I was not. Doing a podcast on the off season last year. So that's
true.
But just the influx of media coming out from the PDGA, thanks to you and Marty. And I just feel like there's just so much content. There's so much content that was published in the off season that I think the excitement has just kind of been there for weeks now for the first event.
Okay. So last year's Wintertime Open first round. Round one, part one, Wintertime Open, with Paul McBeth, Philo Brathwaite, AJ Risley, and I apologize, I don't know who this last player is, Daniel Runvik.
Okay.
It got 96,000 views.
But that's over time. Like, we don't know what the first 24 hours was like.
Yes, right? But I mean, you got to remember, Central Coast has 64,000 subscribers. So here's my question. I'm going to set the line at 100,000.
Okay.
Do you think this video gets 100,000 views, let's say by Monday, over the weekend? By the next time we record the podcast, will there be 100,000 views on this video?
I'm going to go closer to 80.
You know, closer to 80.
Yeah.
Are
we putting anything on the line here?
No, this is just chit-chatting.
You know me.
Early. It's early in the season. Let's let's pace ourselves.
Always got to put something on the line.
I mean, pride. Our pride's always on the line.
Right. That's good.
I've been just watching and kind of paying attention to the internet this offseason and seeing how much excitement there's been anytime there's been something related to Paul McBeth. These building the bag videos with Jomez. Prototype putter discs, the discs that have been released separately, and things are just flying off the shelves. And I sent Paul McBeth a Scrooge McDuck gift the other day because it's like that's just I imagine it's like him swimming through his vault of coins, except for those coins are frisbees. Yeah. Because I just, it's just, it's clearly just, he's smashing everything right now. So honestly, I'm going to say, and maybe this is bold of me, but I'm going to say by next week's podcast, 2019 Wintertime Open round one will have more than 100,000 views.
Well, we were talking about,
I think people are going to be so intrigued to watch Paul McBeth throw for a new company.
Yeah, I won't be surprised.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to stay conservative with my guess.
Well,
why do you think though that he's so? So I think that people obsess over him and like to follow him so much because he is kind of mysterious. He's not one of those people that like. So in comparison to Eagle, for instance, Eagle will put up a vlog, your favorite word, vlog, just kind of detailing like what he's doing, what he's eating, all the things that he's doing. And Paul McBeth doesn't put all his life out in the public eye like that. And he's kind of mysterious, I think.
Is like something, you think there's like an intrigue factor?
Yeah, definitely.
I could see that. I think
Hannah shares more about their life than he does.
Oh, for sure.
And maybe it's because like he stays a little bit more private because his sponsorships kind of do the talking for him and kind of promote him.
I think for Paul, I think honestly it's just one of those things where he's let the play do the talking for him, and like he's been such a dominant player. And look, like the thing that I always come back to with Paul is it's a ceiling thing. He's consistently fantastic, and then his ceiling to do amazing things in the sport has consistently been higher than anybody else. Like he goes out, he's done the 18 under par rounds, he did his, you know, five majors in a season. Like he's done some things in this modern era of disc golf where there is so much more media and social media on it that it's elevated his status above anybody else. And there is the mystery factor, but I think some of it is just an attitude factor too. I mean, he'll clap back at people on social media or clown on his buddies, or, you know, he's not afraid to be opinionated occasionally, even if some people think he shouldn't. Like, I think it's kind of a personality thing. Like he's truly like, he's been one of the most consistently great and then also popular players of this era. And I think it just combines to get that level. And then you add in the whole factor of like, oh my gosh, this guy's been throwing for one company his whole life and now he's going to another. And that just amps up the intrigue so much that I really can't help but think that like these videos are going to smash records this week.
Yeah. I think also this wasn't even on our list of things to chatter about, but now that we're into it, I think just the fact that he's so professional and, you know, the stereotype of disc golfers of being hippies with long hair and tie dye. And I am totally guilty of that. When I first got into disc golf, I was the hippie with long hair and tie dye and Birkenstocks. And I still have some of those things. I just don't wear them when I play golf. But I feel like he just kind of blew the stereotype out of the water and just made people think about the sport in maybe a little bit different way. And then you see younger players dressing like that. When Anthony Barella was a tiny boy, like he was like tiny Paul McBeth.
Right.
And then you've got like the Mondawana sisters dress super professionally. They've got the tucked in shirt and the belt, and they always just look so put together.
Yeah, he's kind of ushered in a new generation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of Anthony Barella, he will be on that feature card round one with Paul McBeth and Steve Rico and Eagle McMahon over on Disc Golf this weekend. That tournament starts Friday and the video footage will come out on Saturday. And Sarah, there are actually, besides our long chat about Mr. McBeth, there are a lot of other people playing this tournament. And even on the FPO side, like FPO field, Katrina Allen, Jessica Weiss, Lisa Fakus, Ellen Widboom, Hannah McBeth, some bigger names who we know and have heard. On the men's side, besides Paul and Eagle and Steve Rico and Anthony Barella, you've got Josh Anthon, who, man, this course really plays to him. This is like a what's his course up in like an Orangevale, Shady Oaks kind of style, you know, okay. And you got Bobby Music, SoCal legend. You got Philo Brathwaite coming off a win in Thailand. Just won a big A tier at the Samui Slyne Classic. Garrett Gerthy, Joel Freeman, AJ Risley. Like there's a lot of big names playing this tournament. So what do we do about picks?
What do we do?
I'm gonna let you go first because
can we like
I'm a gentleman.
Can we virtually rock, paper, scissor?
No, can we? Sure. on honor code. Honor
there's
code.
There's got to be an app for that.
Well, okay. We'll just try it. Okay, ready? Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Rock.
I did scissors, so you get to go first. There you go.
Wait, question for you before we move on from that. Do you go rock, paper, scissor, and then throw it down, or do you go rock, paper, scissor?
Like throw on the third or throw on the fourth, basically.
Yeah, throw on the third or throw.
I usually throw on the shoot.
Me too.
Yeah,
I've had arguments with people recently. I won't name names, Sean Sinclair, about where you throw it down, and I've
done it multiple ways, but I think my daughter has come from school and wanted to do more rock paper scissors shoot.
Yeah.
And so that's kind
of she's people. The expert.
Her way of playing rock, paper, scissors is she likes to do like rock, paper, scissors, but anything. So like rock, paper, scissors, giant explosion. We get crazy sometimes. Explosions. Yeah.
I like that. Okay.
Anyway. Okay. So for picks, we're going off the rails here. For picks this year, we're going to try and simplify things a little bit because we got a little off track last year and it ended up being difficult. So we're still gonna do a winner on MPO and FPO, and we're still gonna do a top five lock MPO and FPO, but we're gonna make it simple. If you win, you get a point. If you don't win, you don't get a point. If your player came in the top five, you get a point. So potentially you could pick the wrong person but still come up with more points in this style. I like it. Consistency. Yeah.
Wait, so do I get so if I were to pick Anthony Barella for first.
Mm-hmm.
No, I guess that doesn't make sense. Okay. Yeah. I got
to pick someone else, Tree Law.
Now I'm just thinking too far into this. All right.
Okay. We'll try and keep it simple and we can, you know, it's just a podcast. If we need to change the rules or format, we can. It's just a podcast. It'll be okay. So Sarah, I will give you the honors. You know what though? We've talked about enough on the men's side. Let's talk about the women's side. I like the women's field here.
I do too. So just looking at last year, Jessica Weiss came out with the win. Actually, she was tied with Lisa Fakus for first and looks like she came out with the win. And we just talked to her recently on the podcast and she seemed pretty, excited to play this event. And when we asked her what her 2019 goals were, she was like to win the Wintertime Open.
So with some inspiration.
Yeah. So she's very focused. She's done it before. So let's see. There's a few women that are playing this year that did not play last year. Katrina Allen, Ellen Widboom. But I'm gonna go with Katrina Allen.
Oh man, you
she seems like
a whole segment where you just built up.
Sorry, she seems like she's in a really good place right now in her life, and I'm feeling good about her. I think this is going to be like a really good year for her.
Well, fine. I'll go with the inspirational wants to win one for the Gipper story, and I'll take Jessica Weiss.
All right, deal.
We'll come do top five locks after. Let's pick up. Let's just stay in that same division. Do top five. So
okay.
Not a terribly deep field. Only eight players. So who are you going to take for top five?
I'm going to go with. This is probably not a surprise. Lisa Fakus, she did tie for first last year, and she is the fourth highest rated player in the field. So, no, third highest player in the field.
Yeah, so this is a hard one for me because out of the players who I would most likely pick for top five, it's Ellen Widboom and Hannah McBeth, both of whom are awesome, and I don't want them to listen to this show and be upset if I don't pick them. I feel like this week.
We know Hannah listens. I don't know if Ellen listens, so...
Hmm.
Don't let that.
I'm not picking her. No, I'm just kidding. but I was leaning toward Hannah just because I don't know. Like she's obviously you can tell like on some of these video logs or video blogs, some of these videos that she's been playing more. She's been practicing more. Her rating, I believe, has has gone up, right? She's 903 now. I don't believe she was in the 900s last year. Right. She's up one. I'm sorry. She was in the 900s last year. Sorry, Hannah. But I like Hannah for this one. Top five. So let's go with Hannah for top five. And then let's go over to the men's side and make our picks for the win. Sarah, it's up to you.
Oh, all right. Well, last year, Lance Brown won. Only one.
By like one stroke right?
Over yeah. Paul McBeth and two strokes over Eagle. Is Lance Brown playing this year?
He is.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Oh, I don't want to go first.
Come on, you're going between Paul and Eagle. Like, just
I know, but it's like, is Paul going to be very successful with his new discs, or is he not going to be? That's the question.
Well, that's the answer that you have to give right now.
Okay. Well, I know they both listened to the show, and I didn't pick Hannah on the women's side, so I'm going to go with Paul on the men's side there.
Okay. Wow. Letting the listeners influence your picks. Integrity here, Sarah.
All politics. It's just a podcast.
It is just a podcast, but we're making picks with people. Now, look, I would have taken Paul, too, just for the palace intrigue factor of, like, man, it'd be pretty amazing to see him come out and win his first tournament with a new sponsor. I wouldn't be surprised if he did it. I'm also not going to be surprised if Eagle McMahon wins and I mean, look, and it's not to knock anyone else in the field, but like those are your top two guys right now in disc golf in general, and they're both at this tournament. So I'm taking Eagle.
Okay.
Who do you like for top five?
I'm going to go. I'm just going to go Josh Anton. You have you played this course before, or you've just seen
it on
a video? Yeah. So if you're saying that this is a Anton course, then I trust your judgment.
I mean, I feel like it is a little bit. There's some open spots, but, you know, I think it makes sense for him. Yeah. That's a good pick. I am, let's see here. Man, this is a tough one because the disparity in ratings and stuff isn't very wide with the rest of the mm-hmm. field. You know, you've got from out of the top three who we've chosen already, there's Bobby Music, Philo Brathwaite, Garrett Gerthy, Joel Freeman, AJ Risley, Anthony Barella, all within 10 points, rating points of each other. So you know what? I'm gonna go with Philo. I like Philo for I know he's gonna be a little bit jet lagged coming from Thailand, but I think he'll have some good vibes with him from winning that tournament. You know, it's home type of thing for him in the LA area. So I'm gonna take Philo for top five.
Okay. Can I make a public service announcement real fast?
Sure.
Bobby Music, re-up on your PGA membership. You are not current.
Oh, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, is that big old red X?
There's several other people that aren't current either, but, you know. I mean, he's like, he's the fourth highest rated player.
Yep.
Let's turn that red X to a green check mark.
Hopefully that'll happen by the time we're done here. Yeah, I'm super pumped. I will definitely be watching this Central Coast Disc Golf footage. I think it's going to be fun to see what happens and see how everything goes. So, and it'll give us a lot to talk about next week on the show.
Yeah. Right,
so, speaking of Central Coast Disc Golf, we are now going to take a break and we're going to talk to someone who kind of used to be with Central Coast Disc Golf. We're going to have Corey Merle on the show. He's starting up his own channel this year, hitting the road, making some content, helping us out with content on the PDGA side. And, we're going to chat with him briefly about, you know, his adventures. So, we'll chat with Corey, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. We'll be back in just a minute on PDGA Radio. All right, welcome to the show now. One of the members of the Disc Golf Media striking out on his own. You might know him as Johnny Disc Golf, and that is the name of his new YouTube channel. Corey Merle joins the show now. Corey, thanks for taking some time out of your day. I know you're just about to start hitting the road, man. Are you excited?
I am super excited, and you know, thank you so much for having me on. I'm actually in San Diego right now, a little bit south of Wintertime Open. The van's in the shop. It's getting out at noon today, so just in a few hours. And yeah, I'm excited to get it started.
Awesome, man. Well, so before we get into all the nitty-gritty of like why you're doing it, all that good stuff, just give us the elevator pitch for your channel. What kind of stuff, you know, there's a lot of disc golf content out there. There's round coverage. There's people doing these, you know, just behind the scenes videos or things in fans. What are we going to be seeing on Johnny Disc Golf this season?
Yeah, so I you know, like you, and I'm sure a lot of the folks out there know, I've been doing round coverage basically exclusively for the past 2.5 years now. I've had this idea in my head of, you know, if we look back at in the past, like Terry Miller's vlogs, I really liked that content. But at that time, there just wasn't really the market to make that sustainable. You know, he was just kind of doing it as one-offs and while he was at certain events, and it was fun, but it just didn't have that sustained success. I would like to package that in a more modern feel, right? So I take a lot of my inspiration from esports, League of Legends in particular, and they do a really good job at having a player-focused media, you know, like approach. So that's what we're all tuning in for. You know, Central Coast Disc Golf is great, right? They have the portal to the players. They have all of that. And Joe Mess is great too. They do a great job. But, you know, we don't really get to hear from any of our players. If you're a fan of James Conrad, if you're a fan of Kevin Jones, where do you go to interact with those people?
I just call them on the phone, but I know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe text messages for us.
All right.
But for everybody else, you know, there's no real way to become a fan of these people.
Absolutely.
So I would like to do, you know, a combination of both like pre-event, post-event lifestyle type interviews, a little bit more longer form, talking about, you know, where they come from, where they're going, their vans, all that good stuff. And then shorter, more to the point post-round interviews. That's kind of the meat and potatoes of the channel. But, you know, I went to film school, right? That I want to make movies. So the other part of it is a little bit more documentary style, you know, be it behind the scenes, if I'm hanging out with the Central Coast guys, or, you know, if I'm hanging out with a little more players, then maybe, you know, I take the camera out while we hike the Grand Canyon.
Sure.
I'd also like to sit these guys down and interview them and do a little bit more produced pieces. We saw profiles
last year.
You're
kind of trying to bring in that content that we see on, you know, if you watch the NFL or Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. or anything like that, you're trying to bring in that content that comes in before the game or at halftime or
exactly.
things like that has that higher quality feel to it.
Exactly. Like there's so many people filming the shots. Like we got that covered. We don't need any more people doing that or, you know, maybe we do, but I just feel like I have a unique opportunity to add to the scene, something that hasn't existed before. And I'm just super excited to get started.
Sure. So, I mean, obviously that means you're not really going to be working with Central Coast Disc Golf as closely. You know, was that a tough decision for you to make?
It was. I mean, and I should say this, like I'll be at Masters Worlds for Central Coast. So this isn't like 100% out. It's just, you know, with the current media landscape, I had to figure out what was best for me and what was best for the scene as a whole. And that meant that, you know, I had to take a step back from Central Coast. And Ian's like genuinely one of my best friends. It was nothing personal. It's not like that at all. It's just, you know, sometimes people have to pivot.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's been an interesting offseason in that regard.
No question.
You know, so I mean, now, obviously, the other thing is that I know you're going to be, for people who don't know, Corey's also going to be working with us at the PDGA at national tour events and worlds and things like that, putting together not really similar content, actually. Doing more like those kind of round recap videos like you would see on the PGA Tour put out.
I have nothing but love for you guys for that. You know, it's like the partnership between us has really allowed me to take those events that aren't necessarily, you know, PDGA NTs and majors and actually be able to go to those without that stress of like, I have to monetize my time or else it's, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it.
Well, man, we're happy to have you do it because I think just kind of like you're trying to fill a void in content, so are we in that regard. And like, but my question with that though is, so it let's say it's not a national tournament and you're going to the Disc Golf Pro Tour events. They've been a little more, you know, they're taking their lead card stuff in house and sure. things like that. You know, what's that mean for you at those events? Are you going to have to like paying a fee to have access and come and film stuff? Have you figured that out yet? Are you going to be going to those events? Like what's your game plan look like in that regard?
Yeah. So my plans right now, unless something, you know, tragic or devastating happens, my plans that I will be at all the Pro Tour events, except for Jonesboro and Great Lakes Open. I just have some things going on those weekends. I can't, you know, I just can't make them, but It's funny that you asked, you know, how are we going to go about it? We have to pay a fee. I've been in conversation with the Pro Tour, Steve Dodge, and their head of media, Danielle. I think her last name is like Charlet. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but I've been going back and forth, and they're really interested in hiring out content creators, right? But I want to do things for myself. So we've kind of been going a bit back and forth about, is there going to be value on the Pro Tour side? And if not, then I think it's likely that I will have to pay a fee. If that's the case, like, honestly, I'm happy to do that. If it's reasonable, like, you hear the Las Vegas Challenge 5,000, like, that's ludicrous. Like, nobody's paying that. But if it's like a reasonable fee, I'm happy just for like the sake of like a good working relationship, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to be taken advantage of anybody, and I don't want to feel like I'm being taken advantage of. So sure. I would rather just keep it above board and try and move toward the future where, you know, that they have a property that has value. It makes sense that I should pay a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Just for the sake of clarification with Las Vegas, that was more geared toward commercial entities, not necessarily, editorial or because I see your content as more like editorial or promotional, not necessarily like a brand, if you will.
Yeah, and I think it's super important. Like, I'm really actually glad that you mentioned that, because my goal is to not have a major manufacturer as like a number one backer. We saw Jomez last year. I mean, it was basically the end of a show. I love the guys, but, you know, it was Nate Sexton and Big Germ's opinion and thoughts on things that got broadcast to basically everybody. And it's great. Those guys are good and they're fun and people love them. But I just want to have the opportunity to maybe not be so in bed with the manufacturer and really have like an equal opportunity platform. That's what I'm super focused
on. So how do you fund yourself then? Is it, I know you've got a Patreon kicked up. Is it stuff like that? Or is it like you're going to try and make some connections outside the sport? I mean, because I can't imagine that it's easy to stay sustainable on the road without that financial support.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that really, to this point, the manufacturers are the only ones that have had a legitimate enough amount of money to like fund this type of thing. So, you know, as an example, I have talked with Airborne Disc Golf over, that's Kayla Visca's kind of more like a lifestyle brand. It's like apparel, right, and that sort of thing. So like, you know, we've worked out a partnership to where I'll be wearing a lot of their gear and that sort of stuff. Over in Stockton, California, more, you know, my neck of the woods, there's a disc shop called OTB, Only the Best. And we've worked together to partner for the first four events, just to have a little bit of branding. Now, the beauty with that is that's not a manufacturer, right? That's an equal opportunity distributor. So
yeah.
There really isn't any, like, if it's an Innova event, sure, they're selling all the Innova plastic. If it's a Discraft event, they're selling all the Discraft plastic. So companies like that that I would like to partner with rather than just a one narrow scope.
So, I mean, realistically, how, give me an inside look at, like, you know, obviously we know there's touring players and they go on the road and they basically play for their living. Most of them, you know, there's an elite tier that doesn't have to worry about if they, you know, don't cash. Or
yeah.
Not,
yeah. They're like getting like the bottom line. Regardless.
But like, you know, there's that threshold of players where they're out there touring and grinding and, you know, they're living week to week. Like, is it similar for you on the media side?
I'll say that this year is a new experience, right? So I don't have a good hard data point.
Sure.
I mean, like, you know, when it comes to that,
was
but
it
like,
for you?
Yeah. Yeah. So last year it was, you know, it's difficult to talk about money in disc golf, right? Because there's this general, like, people think that, you know, it's really awesome to be involved, but like the second you claim that you're making money off the scene, you kind of get a bad guy like thing. So I quit my job and I made a full-time living doing disc golf media last year. You know, there was a couple points in the season where it was a little touch and go, but in general, you know, if I'm going to a tournament and if I, like last year for Central Coast, like I'm pretty much guaranteed top five cash, right? So
sure.
I can't imagine day to day my frisbee throwing skills dictating like my daily or annual income. That's just like a nightmare for me. So one thing that I'm focusing on with the media is like a predictable, consistent income source to where I don't have to super stress out about it. And like, I can go out to eat every once in a while and not freak out like, oh my God, this is like half my week's budget. And, you know, that's something that I'm putting a priority on. You know, I'm 29. I'm not like an 18-year-old with fresh, like I need to, it's getting to the point where we're gonna have to start a career looking at thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a good question to follow up on. Like what's the reaction from like family and friends when you try and do this stuff? Obviously they know you're passionate about it, but are any of them are ever like, dude, just, you know, stay home and yes. Get a real job?
Well, okay. I'm so, so fortunate in that my family is so supportive. I'm not going to say that they're like, it's not like a financially, like I don't ever have to worry about anything. It's not that situation at all, but just from like a social emotional standpoint, I have the most supportive family that I could ever ask for. And like their number one goal is that I'm happy and doing what I want to do. And this is it, you know, it's like, I'm just so fortunate. Like my grandparents maybe are a little bit on that old school side of like, well, how's your 401k doing? And I just, you know, I push those questions to the side, right? I transition.
Collectible destroyers in my garage. Yeah,
exactly. You know, those 10-year anniversaries in 20 years are going to be worth a lot.
Yeah.
but honestly, overall, my family's been super awesome. And one thing that is part of that is I have family both on the West Coast and East Coast. So, you know, early in the season, I have San Diego and San Francisco as good little stopping points. And then I have a bunch of family, you know, from as south as North Carolina, but really all up in that Northeast. So it's the two home bases where I can save a ton of funds just by kind of hanging around with family on the off weeks and that sort of thing. So, you know, I kind of come from an artistically leaning family, maybe, you know, so they really just get that passionate drive is where it's at.
Nice. So Wintertime Open's coming up this weekend. What's your ideal piece of content that you want to create this weekend to kick off your channel?
I'll tell you what, my number one, and this is kind of, it's like typical disc golf, right? My motto for disc golf media is there's always something, you know, as much as you think you're prepared, there is always something that's going to keep you up to like 2 or 3 in the morning. It's just inevitable. And this week, I was planning on coming up today, actually, this morning up to Wintertime Open, getting some interviews in before the event, also tomorrow, just kind of talking about off-season training, you know, disc switches, obviously, you know, you have a ton of people switching manufacturer sponsors, right. And just get a feel for that. But it's like pouring rain, like all down the coast today and tomorrow. So I'm actually kind of am like ballparking it in my head, like what is that going to look like before? Because with a lot of people, they're not going to be practicing, right? If it's like raining an inch and a half on Thursday, the day before. Right. So I'm going to go up there. I'm going to communicate with a lot of guys. I'd like to get a few interviews out before the event starts, or at least before the round coverage releases on Saturday, just to give like whet the appetites a little bit. But through the weekend, I'll be sitting down with people and getting a little bit more long form stuff. But that post-round interviews are what I think I'm going to focus most on, like short, 45 seconds to a minute shareable
sound bites.
Just sound bites, and basically, you know, check out all the coverage over at Central Coast Disc Golf, that type of deal, right? It's
sure
I want to be able to work with everyone, and like, you know, if I can help drive traffic to them, maybe they can help drive traffic to me. But yeah, I want to get my feet wet this weekend, you know. I want to get a lot of the players comfortable with me going up and asking, hey Eagle, can I grab you for like 10 minutes and just have a chat about the off season. Hey, Paul, can I grab you for 10 minutes and just talk about, you know, the Discmania tour rig, the Discraft tour rig, excuse me.
I don't think Eagle sits down. Like you could probably get Eagle while he's doing some jumpy jacks, and it would actually make it. It makes for better content.
I'm in for whatever.
Awesome, man.
But yeah, so it's just about like getting the disc golf community as a whole used to me interacting, you know, because there's not really been anybody doing that lately.
Yeah, you know, you're talking to one of them, but besides that,
this is a great point, because there really has never been anyone committed to doing this full time, right? Full-time. Like you get out to like 6 events, right? You have Ulti World who sends, you know, Jamie Thomas or a few other guys out, or maybe some regional people out to a few events. But like there really in recent memory hasn't been anyone committed to doing this full time, like at all the events. If I'm a fan, I can just click Johnny Disc Golf in the morning and I can predict maybe 1 or 2 videos pops up, and I can just like while I'm eating breakfast, I can listen to Eagle talk about, you know, working on his sidearm and you know, putting percentage goals and that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm excited to see what you put out. So this is last chance right now. What's the plug? Where can people go to find the channel and, you know, support your efforts?
Yeah, so youtube.com/JohnnyDiscGolf, or just if you just Google Johnny Disc Golf YouTube, it'll, you know, that's probably the easiest way. I'd never type in like the full www's, sure. But and then patreon.com/JohnnyDiscGolf. The way that I would like to shape that, though, a lot of people do it like per video. I wanted to charge people once per event, right? Because I'm going to be producing a lot of content, and it seems silly to pay for like every 10-minute video. So the way I'd like to design my Patreon is once per event, you get to donate whatever you set it to, you know, that's your preference. And then on that Patreon, maybe I'll release the interviews, maybe like a day early or 2 days early or something like that, just to incentivize it a little bit. But yeah, man, head over to Facebook, Instagram @JohnnyDiscGolf, all that social media metrics, that all counts, you know?
Nice, man. Well, good luck out on the road. We will see you out there, and looking forward to it.
Thank you so much, man. I'll see you in a week, I think.
Yeah, just about, man. A week until Vegas.
Can't wait.
That was Johnny Disc Golf. Go find him on all of your favorite internet spots. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. Okay, Sarah, it is still the winter time, but that doesn't mean there are not any rounds that were hot from over the weekend. So let's check them out. Why don't you tell us what was happening on the FPO side for this week's hot rounds?
We actually have some pretty scorching rounds.
They
for
are
the
pretty,
quote unquote,
wow.
Off-season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So the fifth hottest rated round was a 939 at the Dynamic Discs Presents the Town Lake Pro-Am. And that was in McKinney, Texas. And Tana Wendover shot a 63, which was rated 939, her first round. And
very nice.
Won that event by 13 strokes. So congratulations for making the Hot Rounds leaderboard her first time, I believe. So pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second hottest round, or rather fourth hottest rated round. I'm still not used to going from the bottom to the top.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Christine Jennings at the Cracked Plastic Open Men Am2, All.
All right.
All right. And she shot a 941 rated round, her second round, and went on to take third place. And that event was in Climax, Michigan. So congratulations.
What are Christine's tour schedules looking like this year? Like, I feel like we've been seeing her name a lot lately. I know she's a younger kind of up and comer, but.
Yep. It looks like she's got a lot of smaller tournaments leading up to the Glassblown Open. And then Ledgestone, but between all of those looks like maybe some A, B, and C tiers. So she's got a lot of events on the list, though.
And she's been playing real well.
Yeah, she has. It's pretty cool. The third hottest rated round was a friend of mine named Michelle Green, and she shot a 948 rated second round at the CADL Presents the 18th Annual Buckhorn Open, sponsored by Dynamic Discs, and that was in New Hill, North Carolina. And she had a pretty, did I say what she was rated? What it was rated? A 948 second round. And she won in a pretty stacked division with Sarah Nicholson taking second and Elaine King taking third. So
wow.
She beat Elaine. So Michelle's rated, she's a very good golfer. She's rated 880. And Elaine, Sarah's 913 now, and Elaine is 934. So she killed
it. That's a solid W there.
Yeah. Beat Elaine by 5 strokes.
She might be the Hot Rounds Player of the Week.
I totally agree. That's the first time we've done that, and she deserves it.
You know what?
Yeah. So congratulations, Michelle. That's awesome. And then we have a tie for the second highest rated round, and that was shot at the same event, the Samui Swine Classic 6, presented by Dynamic Discs. And that was over in Thailand, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm totally going to butcher these names, but Tabia Wallace and View Giorgio both shot a 954 rated second round, and they finished first and second, respectively. So congratulations for making the Hot Rounds leaderboard this week. And do you want to know who shot the hottest rated round?
Well, I already know, but you can tell the listeners.
Okay. Let me get back to the page. The hottest rated round of the weekend was shot by Ragna Lewis. We all know her. She shot a 968 rated first round at the Cracked Plastic Classic in Michigan, and she took first place.
Nice. So, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Remember that time when I just made up a new award for the show?
Yeah. Hot rounds, though.
Player of the week. I think it should be a thing. Okay. I think I've kind of tried to do that before and just haven't done it quite as smoothly. Yeah. So we'll stick with it.
All right, let's do it. It's official.
we need to do some kind of like social media post for that or something. Get people really happening.
Yeah, you can totally do that. You just voluntold yourself.
That's a word. Let's go over to the men's side and starting at the Barnett Park Championships presented by Orlando Disc Golf. We had Randon Latta shooting a 1048 rated second round. He took second place at the event to a Mr. Calvin Heimberg, who has just been slain lately. I'm going to make a quick aside on this. There was Andrew Fish tweeted out recently that Calvin Heimberg is averaging like 1053 or 1055 rated golf over his last handful of events. And that's silly.
I'm really high. I'm so looking forward to seeing how he does this season.
I am too. I think he's got breakout potential written all over him. He kind of broke out already, but even more breakout potential. Anyway, back to Randon Latta. I do want to focus on him a little bit because 996 rated player, so 1048 rated round, fantastic. Also, a huge improvement on his first round, which was 995 rated. So jumped up in the standings, got him second place.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Randon Latta. Over at the Ballantine Hotel Open, presented by Innova Disc Golf and played against Sports Pineville. Sarah, did you happen to see any of the pictures floating around from this tournament, like on social media?
I recognize the name of the event.
It looks really pretty. Wait,
is this the one that Henry Childers runs in North Carolina?
Yeah, yes.
It is. Yep. He's run this for a couple years now, and I've always been really jealous because I think he started running it after I moved out of the area.
Really nice scenic piece of land there.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Brandon Brown shot a 1050 rated second round, and he ended up coming in second place at the event. So nicely done, Brandon. Our third hottest rated round was back over on the West Coast. Scott Withers shot a 1051 rated first round, and this was at the Southern Oregon Winter Series 23. All right. So nicely done, Scott. I believe Scott Withers is up in the voting right now for the Las Vegas Challenge feature card, which I'll give a little plug to.
Yeah.
If you go check out the Innova Discs or PGA Facebook pages, you can vote on who you want to see on the feature cards. Back over at the Ballantine Hotel Open, Dan Hastings won that event in part due to a 1052 rated opening round. So nicely done, Dan. And that leaves our final round, or our final hottest round, from none other than Philo Brathwaite, a 1063 rated final round at the Samui Swine Classic 6 over in Thailand. And he kind of ran away with that thing. 5-stroke victory for Philo.
Oh, wow.
$960 bucks in his pocket. That'll go a long way in Thailand. And yeah. I hope he just wants to bring all of that solid play with him over to the Wintertime Open. And also, speaking of feature cards, Philo Brathwaite going to be on the opening round feature card Las Vegas Challenge.
That's right.
We'll talk a little. We'll talk a fair amount more about that event next week. Sarah, I forgot to tell you, you know who didn't end up on the hot rounds this week?
You.
Me. But I did actually get to play a tournament.
I heard.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, I didn't look up your stats. How did it go?
No, it wasn't sanctioned.
Oh.
So no stats for me. Yeah. Dang. I mean, it was an ice bowl. There were mulligans and all that stuff. So can't really do a sanction.
What place? What place did you come in?
Oh, I didn't use any mulligans. So not great. I shot like four over on a new course. It was on a golf course. A lot of really tricky, tricky pin placements with greens and bunkers and stuff. So I had a couple shots that ended up on greens that I didn't intend to and stuff, but I was kind of focusing on challenging myself. So I didn't want to just take the mulligans, I figured, you know, might as well see how I did.
Yeah.
But it was great. I got to play with AJ Risley and his dad and cool. listener, show listener, Kevin Gomez. Shout out Kevin Gomez. That guy bombs. Holy cow. he was, him and AJ were going toe to toe on distance. It was fun to watch. Awesome. And so it was just a lot of fun. It was out at this place called Reedy Creek, and hopefully they're going to be putting a permanent course there. There were, I think we had 105 or 106 people really trying to show a big turnout and get the city to drop those baskets in the ground permanently. So that was fun. I would not have ended up on the hot rounds even if it was sanctioned, but it was still a good time. So
awesome. That's all that matters, really.
Exactly. I know.
Unless
I know.
It's your full-time job.
Well, and then, hopefully I just get paid to talk about whose people's full-time job it is. Exactly. I don't have to worry about winning it because then, then it'd be in a different line of work. So Sarah, it is, it's about to be Valentine's Day and you know, why are you laughing at Valentine's Day? Are you,
I
one
feel
of
like
those,
you like, did it. What? I feel like you did it. You did like a weird, you're like Valentine's Day.
Oh, I wasn't intending to. I apologize. Okay. I wasn't trying to like make it sound romantic. It's, you know,
do you guys do anything
it's okay.
special or?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like it's, I don't know, like not. I mean, we got a kid, so not really. We just, we hang out and we do our thing and stuff like that. Do you guys do anything major or is it pretty low key?
No, I know what you were going to say. But like,
are you like an anti-corporate? Like, I don't celebrate Valentine's Day because it's just a commercial holiday.
Somewhere, you are, isn't it? Somewhere in between. So I like to, I value every day and we do special stuff for each other all the time. All the time. And just because it's Valentine's Day, it's not like, oh my God, I have to go out and buy.
You have to do this, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that feels a little bit forced. But I think this year we're meeting up with another couple friend of ours and we all like to go rock climbing. And so we're all going to meet up at the climbing gym and climb for a little bit. And then I've just made a reservation for like a casual place downtown to eat. So
very nice. Very nice.
It'll be cool. I'm excited.
Well, with Valentine's Day on tap, I wanted to kind of go and revisit something that was sent to me earlier this year. This is from Eric Vandenberg, you know, longtime player at PDGA number 3089, one ahead of PDGA number 3090 and his wife, Elaine King. And he sent along some interesting numbers that he went and looked at disc golf couples, you know, husband and wives generally, and their number of wins over the years and kind of rank them and everything. It was just kind of interesting. I thought, you know what? It's Valentine's Day. Why not give some love to the disc golfing couples out there. Now I will say this, we don't have everyone on here. Obviously there are a lot of disc golfing couples. These are the ones that are really the most winning and who have really played the most. I mean, there are a lot of tournaments played on this list.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, how should we go about this, Sarah? Is there anything that really jumped out at you about this list that we have in front of us and people can't see at the moment?
Well, so there's kind of like a two-tiered list and I'm confused as to why some people are on one area and why others are on another area. Yeah. So, like you said, obviously these are mostly couples that have been around for a while. Let's see.
It's a little old school. I don't know if some of the younger couples on tour or anything like that
would have the numbers.
I have had a chance to really rack up as many events or wins, but let's just do like the top five on this list. How about
Okay.
So at number five,
should we go five? Okay. So no surprise. No surprise is Valerie Jenkins-Doss and Nate Doss. As a couple, they have played 623 tournaments. Wow.
That's a lot. They've won a total of 160 events, which puts them at about just a shade over 25% win percentage.
That's a pretty darn good percentage.
Man, I did not realize Valerie Jenkins has won 118 events.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I mean, but she's been playing. I mean, they've both been playing since they were juniors.
Well, right. So here's my question. And granted, Eric put together this list and it's based on kind of just raw numbers and everything. And so he kind of ranked people by, you know, their totals and their win percentages and everything.
Yeah.
But combined, Val and Nate have like 7 world titles.
Yeah. You think those should be weighted a little bit more?
Well, I don't know exactly off the top of my head. I am terrible, and I don't know exactly how many, you know, combined some of the other couples on this list rank.
Yeah.
Has Eric won any world titles?
I couldn't tell you.
I'm going to look at that while you tell us who the next couple is on the list.
Okay. Well, the next couple definitely has world titles, and they are Rick and Sylvia Vokes from Bowling Green, Kentucky. They have played 699 events. When was this list?
So many.
When was this polled?
Oh, goodness. Sometime toward the end of 2018. It is a couple months old, so they may have cracked 700.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. And you have the percentages, so...
That win percentage for Dr. Rick and Sylvia was about 28.3%.
Wow.
That's insane. Like, when you look at it in, like, raw winning percentage, like, it's one thing to say, here's a lot of victories. And it's another thing to look at the amount that they're winning out of the events they've entered. That part, to me, is just stunning.
Agreed. Yeah. The next couple on the list, this couple I have known since my first or second year of playing disc golf about 10 years ago, Mike and Amy Mosier. And they're really good. And you don't hear their names thrown around too much anymore. But they were always a couple that I looked up to when I first got into the sport. And they have played 753 events together.
Wow.
Not together, total.
Well, I mean, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, they weren't playing all those at the same time, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then what was their winning percentage?
Their win percentage then was 37.
Oh, my gosh.
37.3.
That's insane.
That's incredible.
Yeah, Mike Mosier he played 580 events and won 229. That's insane.
That's a lot of events.
That's almost half. Not, what is that? That's like 40% just for him.
That's pretty.
Maybe a little bit over 40%. Yeah. Wow. This next couple everybody knows is Des Redding and Jay Redding. They've played. If you thought
Literal Hall of Fame couple. They were both in the Hall of Fame. Like, come on.
If you thought 753 events was a lot, they have played 876.
Man, that's awesome. That's 32. They've won 283 of those. So their winning percentage is 32.3. And I'd be willing to bet that they've got a couple more since the list was created.
Yeah. All right. And so the most winningest couple was Elaine King and Eric Vandenberg. And they have played almost 1,000 events, 972. And with how systematic Eric and Elaine are about all this stuff, I'm sure they know like when their 1,000th event will be. I hope they celebrate it. It'd be really cool.
I'm sure they do. Yeah. I mean, they're 20 apart as of the creation of this list. Elaine was at 496 and Eric was at 476.
Mm-hmm.
And they have won 345 events. For a 35.5% winning percentage, 266 of those, and, you know, a handful of literal handful of world championships come from Elaine.
Yeah. Dang.
Pretty impressive.
That's very impressive. Did you pull the numbers for anyone else on the list?
Oh, for winning percentages?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much tapers down.
Yeah.
The Mosiers were the outlier in terms of being higher. But I mean, still some really tremendous players on here. I see this couple on here, the Sean Sinclair and Sarah Lamberson.
Yeah, we're on the questionable side of the list.
Well, I think it's because my guess is that Eric put you guys as questionable because you weren't together the whole time Sean was playing, I'm guessing.
I guess, but Josh Childs and Haley Childs are not questionable.
Yeah, we didn't get to them on the list.
They also
just thinks you guys are questionable. I think he just thinks you guys are questionable.
That's
all it comes down to. I agree with him.
I'm going to tell Sean not to answer your phone calls anymore during the day.
Oh man, I love my chats with Sean. So Sarah and Sean have won a combined 63 out of their 308 events, and that is your guys' win percentage is about 20.5.
Okay. And just disclaimer on that, Sean hasn't played an event in 10 years. So I'm
ages.
I'm holding both of us up at this point.
I mean, you do have 23 more wins than him, if you want to rub that in.
But how many of those wins were just me in a division of one?
That I'm not sure. That's a stat that I hope that you have. We'll have to discuss that on a future episode.
Yeah. I don't know how many. I'd have to look it up. Hopefully not a lot.
I was going
to
say, are there that many events that you play where you're just the lone person?
As a female, it happens more often than you want. Like, I'm signed up for a C tier this Sunday, and I'm the only FPO signed up, and it's going to come down to a late decision on Friday or Saturday about whether I play by myself or drop out. So that's kind of the prediction.
Yeah, go there and you go and you win, Sarah.
Yeah, and lose at the same time because I'm in a division of one. So there's no honor in that.
There's no, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I just see you're playing Jonesboro this year. I love it. I didn't realize you were signed up for Jonesboro.
Yeah, it's only 4 or 4.5 hours away from here. So I figured, I've also never been to Arkansas ever. And it touches the state that I live in. So I'm feeling pretty guilty about that.
There you go.
Have to make it up there.
Gotta get there.
Yeah.
Well, I hope some more people. No. Oh, hey, I have news for you.
What?
You are now in a division of two.
Ooh. Who signed up?
Lindsay Martin.
Oh, nice.
Bowling Green, Kentucky. So you. Now you got to go and win.
Now I got to go. Now I just have to show up.
Challenge accepted.
See what happens. There you go.
All right.
You made my night.
We'll check in with you. We're going to have to check in with you about that on next week's show, where we will also be talking, hopefully, about how I swept you in the picks. And then also Las Vegas Challenge, first PGA National Tour event this season. Get excited, Sarah.
I'm excited. I know you I don't sound excited, more. But I look excited. I just don't sound excited.
I don't think we're changing this to a YouTube podcast. I don't think we need cameras on us and stuff. So
I would probably, you'd probably have to find another co-host if that were the case. So
yeah,
just keep it audio only.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I don't need, people don't need to see us. They can imagine us.
And yes.
Our beauty.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Anyway. Sarah, as always, it's been a pleasure. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in to another episode of PDGA Radio. Hit us up with any feedback, radio@pdga.com. Hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends. Help us get some more listeners. Keep this thing going. We appreciate everyone out there who listens. And we will be back next week with some more fun. I'm Steve Hill. That was Sarah Lamerson. And be good to each other. We'll see you next week on PDGA Radio.